This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Today, we are discussing the healthcare system that Sabah and Sarawak need. And we're putting a close lens on these two states because we know that there are major barriers to providing healthcare for every person living in both of those states. And, these are due to inequities caused by geographical limitations, awareness of health issues, and in many cases, documentation is also a major barrier. And of course, in the past 18 months, the COVID-19 pandemic has further exposed how the healthcare system in Sabah and Sarawak may not be able to cope with severe outbreaks of diseases. We're seeing it unfold in real time right now. So in conjunction with Malaysia Day, joining me today is health activist and the Sarawak Women Chief for PKR, Agnes Padan, and consultant obstetrician and gynecologist, Dr. John Teo from Sabah. And they will both be discussing with me, hopefully, about the gaps in the healthcare system in Sabah and Sarawak and how it affects access to and the quality of healthcare provided, especially when it comes to maternal and women's health. How are the both of you today?
Very well, thank you. Coping.
Yeah. Coping is, I think, a word that you hear a lot during these times. And I can't imagine what it must be like for you in Sabah, Dr. John, but I'm sure you can perhaps give us more insights later. But let's have a bigger picture look first. If I can get each of you to describe the state of the healthcare system and services in each of your states. And we're talking generally now, not just focusing on pandemic times. Perhaps, Agnes, we can start with you first, looking at Sarawak.
Okay. Hi, I'm Agnes. I'm now living in Lawas for 3 years now. And before this, I was living in KL for over 20 years. And I am all this while campaigning on social media for 19 years, I can say, ever since the passing of my mom in 2002. So now I'm back in Lawas. And what I noticed for the 3 years I'm here, and actually I noticed there are some little improvement on the system, and also I don't hear much complaint about the... I'm talking about Lawas, where I'm staying at. For throughout Sarawak, I do not have much info on all that, but I'm talking based on Lawas issue lah, because I'm campaigning, focusing on Lawas. In Lawas, we have three borders actually, and this is very challenging for the people of Lawas, and we are mostly from the B40 group, and depending on daily wage earner. And comes to the healthcare issue here. Ever since, let's say about 20 years before. And it is, nothing much has improved so far. And we are still using the same hospital, which is built in 1969. And most of us call it a clinic. And it's a small hospital. It's a district hospital, Lawas. And which is provided with 30 bed, I can say. And usually for chronic patients, they will be sent to out of Lawas, which is either to Miri or Sabah KK Hospital or to Limbang or Kuching or elsewhere. That is actually for us, and that is a troublesome for the people of Lawas. And it caused a lot of other consequences for the patient itself and also for the family.
And I think I will take your Lawas scenario to kind of extrapolate to many other places in Sarawak that have similar, you know, we're talking similar kinds of geographical layout and challenges in terms of distance. But, you know, we can go into a little bit more about that later. But first, Dr. John, about Sabah.
Right. Okay. I've been in Sabah more than 20 years already. So if you then look at the big picture in the past 20 years or so, there is quite a lot of significant improvement in terms of healthcare and healthcare access. If you look at the whole state, and if you just take the state capital, for example, when I was serving in the government hospital, we only have got one hospital. But now there is three, for example, in the state capital. We have got a dedicated women and children hospital. There's also a cardiac center and also the main hospital, which is the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. So there's three government hospitals. Looking at further outside KK, you're talking about Keningau, you're talking about Lahad Dato, you're talking about Tawau and places like that. There are new hospitals coming up, and some of them are actually quite well equipped. And if you do then look at also the staffing, for example, you know, in those days, in KK, for example, where I work as a ONG, there's only two or three of us, you know, covering the whole state. But now, if you look at, for example, Tawau or Lahad Dato or all these places, there's at least two or three specialists stationed there. And of course, in the main hospital in KK, you got about more than 15 to 20 specialists, without specialists again. So if you look at human resource, you look at infrastructure and things like that, yes, there is quite a definite improvement over the last 20 years. But that doesn't distract from the fact that Sabah is like Sarawak, where it is so huge. It is so huge. And there's so much more to do, you know, because people are spread all over. And of course, you look at the rural women and the rural families and things, you know, some of them have to travel, you know, a day or so to reach the nearest facility. And that still happened because it's so huge. And so, of course, there is a lot more to do for Sabah in terms of increasing the infrastructure, increasing the road system, increasing more healthcare facilities again, you know. And if you then take the big picture, of course, the whole healthcare infrastructure in the whole country is actually underinvested. And of course, so is Sabah as well, you know. And we, of course, felt the more of those impact because of the infrastructure problem, where there's roads are not enough, you know, and things like that. Yeah. And the other thing I just want to mention is, of course, the challenges to access healthcare are different for different people, right? And you've got the urban family, for example, which is, of course, has got easier access. You have got, you know, many people know that Sabah have got a lot of underserved community, like the people in the eastern side of Sabah, in the East Coast. You have got a lot of foreigners, documented and undocumented. And those, of course, face a lot of challenges in accessing healthcare. And this is where the area we need to improve.
Adding to Dr. John, I do agree to what Dr. John is saying is about also distance that is most challenging here in Sarawak, actually. And like I am familiar with my place here in Lawas, I'm from the Ulu. So even up to today, we have to travel, if for the Ulu people from my place in the Ulu, we have to travel like up to 7 hours, you know, to reach to Lawas. And that is about 100 kilometers and by Timber Road. And let us imagine if, let's say, you know, a pregnant mom, she wants to give birth. And if let's say her pregnancy is a complicated one, she has to travel, she has to take that journey. And by that, she also will put her life at risk. And that is what our moms have to face here in the Ulu. And actually, but when she reached Lawas District Hospital, and the facilities that we have that can't afford to treat our moms if it is complication pregnancy. But if it is for just, you know, like you are having fever or flu or cough, stomach ache or whatsoever, that can be treated easily in Lawas District Hospital. But what if that complicated patient, they will have to travel to another hospital, like let's say to Limbang, that will take another 1 or 2 hours journey, and let's say to Miri, they will have to go 5 more hours journey by road. But if the patient will have to travel to Miri, will send to Miri, the patient will need to have a passport. Or if they are not from the undocumented, that God knows how the process will, you know, will be easier for the patient themselves. And this is what the government should look into very, very seriously.
And this is exactly what your mom went through almost 20 years ago, Agnes. And 20 years later, Has anything changed?
I think that there are changes, but that is very small changes. I can say like 20 years back, they don't have ambulance, provided ambulance in the Ulu. But after we keep on talking and put on social media or whatsoever about the healthcare issue in the Lawas, and finally, they have placed an ambulance in the Ulu, which is, the distance, even the distance among the villages also is not very near. From my place to this place called Baklalan, which is another 50 kilometers away. And we have ambulance, just one ambulance. That's what I've been informed from the villagers. One ambulance to provide for these three places in the Ulu. And at least we have ambulance for now.
And, that's also because your community has an Agnes, right? I mean, not every community has someone like you and Agnes fighting for them. And that's why there is this continuous call for more structured reforms and improvements. So let's go for a quick break now. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion on how these challenges are affecting the health of the people living in Sabah and Sarawak. I'm speaking to health activist Agnes Padan, as well as consultant obstetrician and gynecologist Dr. John Teo. And we're discussing healthcare in Sabah and Sarawak in conjunction with Malaysia Day tomorrow. Keep it right here on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living on the Bigger Picture with me, T. Xiaoyik. Joining me on Zoom today, my guests, Agnes Padan, health activist and the Sarawak Women's Chief for PKR, and Dr. John Teo, consultant, obstetrician and gynecologist based in Sabah. And we've been discussing the challenges that people in Sabah and Sarawak face in accessing healthcare. Let's now look at all the challenges that the both of you mentioned and how they're impacting people and their health, really down to their everyday experiences. So, Dr. John, if you could, what are the main health issues that are still a huge concern for you in Sabah?
Right. I think Sabah, like a lot of other states, are facing a huge burden of communicable and non-communicable disease. Of course, this is aside from the COVID that we are experiencing now, right? You're talking about malaria, you're talking about TB, all this communicable disease, there's a lot of high incidence, right? And of course, dengue as well. And of course, the non-communicable disease like your hypertension, diabetes, and things like that are rising by the day. So this burden will always be there, and this burden will continuously rise if we do not actually invest more in preventive medicine and invest more in primary health care. Of course, there is some investment, but I think a lot of our healthcare investment are more towards tertiary care, hospital care and things like that. So that's mean because those cost a lot. Where else is so much more expensive to treat a person than to prevent disease. So I think the thing to do is that with limited resources, every country has got some limitation to their resources. We should focus more on primary care, and that will help, especially places like Sabah.
And what about the really basic indicators of health in a community like maternal and infant mortality? What is that looking like in Sabah? And then I'll turn to Agnes after that.
Well, it's comparatively similar to the national figures, actually. Because I think you have to actually divide them into two main groups, right? And one is, of course, the locals, isn't it? And most locals, even though they are far away, you're talking about, say, more than 95 to 98%, has got some antenatal care. And they can actually deliver in hospital if they actually plan. Like those who are very far away to actually come to the town or come to the nearby facility and stay there and deliver. So most of the locals are being well taken care of. And of course, we got a huge network of healthcare workers, especially, your midwife and things like the government who can actually assess them. But that's not to say that every single woman has got those access, because, as I said, there are communities that are very far away or whatever, have got more bigger challenges to access healthcare. And the other group is, of course, the foreigners and even the documented or the non-documented foreigners. And those are a huge challenge, because then they have got, you know, when they got access government facilities, they have to pay actually the foreigners' fees, right? Which is actually fairly high, because there's something what we call the Fees Act. So they have to pay that, and this is very high. And of course, that is one of the problems that is a barrier for them to access. The other problem is, of course, especially for the undocumented, is of course enforcement activities, right? And that again is a huge barrier. So their health statistics may not be so clear, because sometimes simply for the fact that they are undocumented, we can't actually gather, you know, very accurate statistics. So we need to actually revamp the way in approaching this group, and to decouple enforcement activities with access to healthcare. As what we're doing in, for example, the COVID vaccination now, you know, because no one is safe until everyone is safe, that sort of concept. The other thing is the financial consideration and things like that. And if we could actually have a relook about the Fees Act and to try to decrease, you know, or rather to make it a bit more accessible, then that would help in terms of healthcare as well. Because I just want to point out, ultimately, if we don't provide the essential healthcare to all this group, they're going to still end up in hospitals, in Malaysian hospitals, with severe complications. And because of humanitarian needs, we will have to treat in ICU or whatever. And that will cost a lot. So that's why I started just now by saying that preventive medicine is so much more cheaper than actually curative medicine.
And Agnes, what's it looking like in Sarawak in terms of, and you know, you can use Lawas as an example, the kinds of health problems that are still plaguing your community, and how is maternal and infant mortality looking?
I'm so sorry about infant mortality. I do not have info for that, but I'm speaking on what I know, what is going on here. For the moms in the Ulu, I think we only have, there's three villages in the Ulu, which is Long Sukang, Long Semadu, and Baklalan. So for the pregnant moms, they used to go for the maternal care for every month, right? Every month once, and then they have only very, very basic equipments at the clinics. So we have medical officers in the Ulu. And like, for example, for a simple blood test for a pregnant mom, the moms were sent to Lawas. You know, they can't afford to do it at the clinic in the Ulu. And you know, something like this to us is quite simple to do, but you know, for the distance, you know, and the cost of traveling and all that, especially for the pregnant mom, this they have to face all of this, you know, and they have to come up from the Ulu, and then they have to put up a night here in town or whatsoever and all that. But I had, for undocumented moms, I had many opportunities to assist undocumented mothers during first PKP. Actually, this is a very young mom. She has 7 children, and she gave birth at home. And after 2 weeks delivery at home, which she was assisted by the mom. Mom also, you know, orang kampung, they know nothing. They just, you know, I dengar these people talk like this. You should do this. You should do that. So she just did it to help daughter. So after 2 weeks time, the daughter having, she's feverish. And then somehow or other, I helped them before, so they kept my contact number. So they called me at night. At first, I was refused to answer, but thinking of, you know, what if this is an emergency? So I was reluctant to answer, actually. But then I answered the phone call. Then the mother was talking to me. I said, Puan boleh tak datang sekarang tolong saya because anak saya baru bersalin 2 minggu sudah and then she's now feverish. And we don't know where else to call for help, they said. And then she explained, saya orang Sabah, tidak ada dokumen and all that, you know, basically lah. So I said, it's okay, I come now. So I visited the family. So I look at the mom. Oh God, this cannot be happen now. She's very, very young. You know, the children, the eldest child is 10 years old, if I'm not mistaken. 10 years old, then 10, 9, 8, 7, so, you know. And then the one just newly born is 2 weeks old. So I said, okay, it's okay. Just pack some of her stuff. I'll take to Lawas Hospital. And then I asked, why didn't go and, you know, deliver at the hospital? They said, my husband's not working, our family is not working, it's PKP and all that, very difficult to, you know, to cari makan now. And then looking at their situation, they can't afford to pay the hospital bill. So they asked me before I took her to hospital, Puan, nanti pergi hospital sana, Puan akan bayar tak saya punya bill? Sebab saya tidak ada duit satu sen pun, tak ada sekarang nak makan pun tak ada. I said, okay, let's talk about that later. I said, let first bring you to hospital. So I brought her to hospital. I've spoken to the doctor, please check her properly. So I'm very, very, you know, my heart is pumping very fast looking at her. You know, I'm thinking, suddenly my head is thinking about what has happened to my mom. So we're not going to cost her life, you know. So I told the doctor, just do whatever necessary. Let me know. Please contact me, anything. And then everything was settled. She was admitted for 3 days on antibiotics. And then later 2 days discharged. They administered medication, which I have to go and see her for 5 days daily, make sure she has taken the medicine and then to check on the baby. So, and 2 months ago, I visited again the family. During PKP until today, I'm quite checking on the family, giving them some provision and all that. Are they okay, doing okay or not? So I checked 2 months ago. The baby is now running very well and he's quite healthy, so I'm happy to see.
But how many stories like that are there that we don't hear about, Agnes?
I don't know how many more, but I often getting calls from a chronic patient like cancer patients, kidney dialysis patient, and a lot of other chronic illness. So I'm trying my best to help them with applying for a cancer patient. For a cancer patient, I will apply some NGOs to support them. I providing their flight tickets to go for their treatment and back and all that. And then for a wheelchair, the milk, pampers and all that, I'm working on all of that. So if they are eligible to apply for a kebajikan from the government, also I'm trying that. But that is...
You're firefighting. Yeah. Dr. John?
Yeah. I like to echo what Agnes had said just now, and that these people are undocumented or whatever have these challenges, and you know, financial challenges, and of course, and sometimes enforcement challenges, and so that they deliver home birth and things like that with all sorts of complications, and that of course happened in Sabah as well, you know, quite often, and the thing is that what I just like to go on when since you're asking me about maternal mortality. Is that an infant mortality is that there is three very important factors that actually decides and affect your maternal mortality rate. And the first is, of course, proper antenatal care, you know, enough adequate antenatal care. So a lot of these women, the underserved community, the marginalized community, you know, sometimes in the far-flung areas or far away, they do not have that. And of course, foreigners as well. So that's one. So it's antenatal care. Second is, of course, safe delivery. We know that, of course, home delivery is so much more dangerous. And that's why all these complications happen. And they do not have access to safe delivery because, again, of the two factors, you know, the financial factors and the enforcement factor. And finally, the third thing, which is the cheapest way to decrease maternal mortality is, of course, planning their pregnancy and the use of contraception to prevent unplanned pregnancy. because a lot of huge proportion are actually unplanned pregnancy. About, we know that the rate is about 45% roughly in Malaysia, right? And it's no different even in all these communities, it may be even higher. So Malaysia, if you talk about, again, as I said, we cannot group them all together. You have to talk about locals and non-locals, and rural and urban access are all different. But if you just talk generally, if you look at the official statistics, Malaysia do very well on antenatal care generally. And that includes Sabah and Sarawak generally. Yeah. We do also very well on safe delivery. Almost 98% to 99% actually deliver in hospitals. But we do very poorly on contraceptive usage and contraceptive, uptake. The rate has only been about 50%, 55%, and modern contraception is only about 35%. And that has not improved for the last 20 years. So there is a huge gap. If we can actually get all women, regardless of communities, to actually plan the pregnancy and increase the contraceptive usage, we would cut down on maternal mortality and even infant mortality quite a lot. Yeah, so that's the point I want to make.
But, you know, it's, I think, very easy to take a very simplistic view and say they should know better. Or, in the case of the young mother that Agnes was describing, why didn't you go to the hospital? I mean, I guess a simplistic view would be to blame it on poor education or poor health literacy. But it's a lot more complex than that, we do know. Even the issue of family planning, Dr. John, it's so difficult to tackle in a society across Malaysia, right? All communities. How do you think we can tackle this? You know, being able to balance increasing their health literacy and all these other very real challenges that they go through.
Yeah. I agree with you. It's actually a complex. And I think we should never, ever blame anybody because no one wants to be sick. No one wants to have an unplanned pregnancy purposely. You know, no one wants to do that. And no one wants to end up in ICU. But it is the intervening factors that actually cause all these things to happen. We know, for example, and when you talk about family planning, we know very clearly that those who have got lower education has got lower uptake of contraception. We also know that rural women has got lower uptake of contraception than urban women. We also know that those who are on lower socioeconomic group has got lower uptake of contraception than higher socioeconomic group. And that's quite obvious. If you look at just that example, lower socioeconomic group, it's not that they do not want to use contraception or go to clinic to attend. They got no time. You know, they got six children, like what Agnes has mentioned. You know, who is going to look after the children when they want to go to the clinic kesihatan to get the contraception?
Which takes practically a whole day or more traveling.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, sometimes they live so far away. How are you going to get them? You know, get them to go? You know, it costs quite a lot to go. So much. You may say that the contraception is free, but the cost to go to the clinic is not free. You know, you have to pay for the tambang and so on and so forth. And so because of that, all this complex factor, the access become a barrier and usage become a barrier. So the answer is, of course, when you want to improve all women's health and general health, we have to then improve the literacy rate. We have to improve socioeconomic strata, you know, and we have to improve, in terms of the education and things like that. So yeah. It's a general thing.
Yeah. Agnes, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think I do agree with what Dr. John has mentioned. And it is very sad indeed that looking at now in 2021, but yet we are still facing the same condition of road journey from the Ulu. And I'm sure other part of Sarawak, they are also, a worse journey to get to the nearest hospital. They have to go by boat, and later after that, they will have to go by four-wheel drive. And you know, with the mud and all that. And this is very sad. In Sarawak, is very, very, you know, very common, you know, this kind of timber road. And it's like, you know, okay, hello, this is not going to happen. So whatever happened, I just go ahead with my life, you know. It's like we are almost giving up. We are screaming down here, but nobody has really taken it seriously. So it's like, diam sajalah. What to do? Nobody's doing anything. So diam jelah. Mm. So go, just go with it, you know.
I mean, I can't imagine the resilience of the communities, Agnes. Like, I mean, I've been in a four-wheel drive on those timber roads. If you're pregnant, oh my gosh, I yeah. And that's your daily reality. Dr. John, you know, speaking of PKP and the impact of the pandemic, how has that affected healthcare right now? And how has it widened the disparities even more?
Right. Okay. Of course, as everywhere in the country and even the world, is that when PKP happens and the pandemic happens, income come down, you know. People are restricted. Work, employment are coming down. And of course, a lot of movement restrictions are there. So in terms of healthcare access, as long as your income come down and things like that, your healthcare access would be less. You know, whether you go into a private hospital or government hospital, because it costs to go. The treatment may be free, as I said to you, in government hospital, but the trip and everything is not free. So that is one challenge. The second is, of course, the movement restriction. People are quarantined here and, you know, every day being quarantined or being, you know, asked not to go anywhere or things like that. And that, of course, delay a lot of, especially the non-COVID related diseases, right? So you may have your annual pap smear screening, or you know, your mammogram, or even your heart check, or you know, whatever. All those people tend to delay, and that causes a lot of potential complication later on, you know, because they're not picked up, they're not treated. Yeah. And of course, as the COVID overwhelmed our healthcare system, then of course, in terms of healthcare access, you may have clinics that are filled to the brim, hospital that are filled to the brim. And that's been experienced everywhere throughout the country. And of course, in Sabah as well. And of course, if that happened at certain time, it's not all the time, right? But some of the time it may happen. And of course, people will have very much reduced access. So then when you look at women and children, for example, as a group, and you look at the underserved community, the women who are rural, the undocumented or the foreigners, all these groups will feel the impact of it even much, much more. It's magnified, you know, another 5 or 10 times, right? And you just take women, for example. They do multiple roles in families, you know, they're home carer as well as they are working at the same time, and they got a lot of so many responsibility, and yet all these things are exploded, you know, in the pandemic. So this is where I think that's why people said that we are trying to cope, you know, maybe people are just trying to get through it. So I think the faster we can actually control the pandemic, of course, the better it is for everybody, and healthcare access would be better. We have actually, with this pandemic, it looks like we have lost a lot of progress, you know, in terms of healthcare access for the past few years. And we probably have to rebuild it again as we control the pandemic.
And Agnes, in your community, what's the impact of COVID-19? I mean, are people, you know, being turned away from hospitals even?
Yeah, I would like to add to Dr. John, because I have been assisting one of my friend, and she's a cancer patient, and she has been going for follow-up at hospital Likas actually for years, but then ever since PKP, her appointment was postponed up until what month she passed away anyway, and she couldn't go for her treatment. And I'm the one, you know, I'm trying my best to help her to ease you know, her pain and all that, and I'm quite often visiting her in between, and anything she will text me or whatever. So we share quite a lot, actually. It is very sad. And even for a stoma bag, whatever equipment she needed. And it's very difficult to get it here. And she has to call hospital ICAS to provide a stoma bag. But sometimes, you know, the time and the transport, you know, it's not easy to get from KK to Lawas. And she called a friend also in Kuching to get for her a stoma bag. And for them to send it over here, oh God, that is, you know, the weight, and she needed those, but, you know, it's just very difficult to get. And she didn't go for her treatment at hospital because ever since, until the few months, I don't know what month, she passed away, and I'm the one who brought her to the hospital before she passed away.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Agnes. And again, you know, I guess it brings me back to the point that so many of these stories we don't hear about. We just speak about them or hear of them in a very abstract way. But let's go for another quick break. And after that, we'll explore what needs to be addressed, especially in the upcoming tabling of Budget 2022. I'm speaking to health activist Agnes Padan, as well as consultant obstetrician and gynecologist Dr. John Teo, on the healthcare system that Sabah and Sarawak need. We'll be right back on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shawik. On the line with me today are health activist Agnes Padan, based in Sarawak, and consultant obstetrician and gynecologist Dr. John Teo, based in Sabah. And they've both been sharing what they've seen when it comes to healthcare access for people living in Sabah and Sarawak, especially the most vulnerable, those living in the really remote areas, those who are stateless, especially in Sabah. Now, Agnes, moving on to vaccinations, in the context of the pandemic, what has the vaccination program looked like for your community in Lawas? You know, has everyone who can be vaccinated been jabbed?
As we all know, I think Sarawak is now one of the highest vaccinated, right? And Lawas, what I've been informed, they are 70% have been vaccinated. And I think so far it's all good. Yeah, it's all good. Yeah.
All right. And Dr. John, you know, all eyes are really on Sabah in this, I don't know, is it the third wave of the pandemic? What lessons do you think we need to take away from the explosion of cases since the Sabah state election?
Right. I think it's a chronic underinvestment of the healthcare system. And Sabah is bearing the brunt of it. Although, as I said, it's improved over the last 20 years, we need much, much more, you know, much, much more human resource. We need much, much more hospitals. We need better infrastructure. And we need more human resource in, for example, public health. You can see that those personnel or doctors who are in public health may not be enough. They may be doing a lot of things, and it is usually the same person doing so many things. And that happened in other parts of the country as well, where they have to monitor patients who are COVID positive, yet they have to manage the vaccination supply and manage all the other pandemic related on the ground. So the lesson I think we have to take away is that we cannot afford anymore to actually underinvest in our healthcare system. We must actually be committed to increase much, much more of the current investment. And we need to actually increase it rapidly and consistently, rather being every time being reactive to a situation. So we may have a crisis and then we react to it and try to pour in some aid and budget. And then when the crisis goes away, the same goes back again. So that is, I think, the biggest lesson that we hopefully can learn from it.
And, you know, speaking of investments, I mean, in Budget 2021, Sabah and Sarawak was allocated, for Sabah, 5.1 billion ringgit, Sarawak allocated 4.5 billion ringgit for development, including the infrastructure you mentioned, the basic roads, health and educational facilities, so all lumped together. Have you seen any impact from it, Agnes?
I would love to say about, if anything about allocation, that will be a big question mark for us in Lawas, actually. In 2011, actually the federal government allocated 121.6 million for the construction of the Lawas District Hospital, but we don't see the hospital up to today. We don't see, where's the hospital? So this is, I don't know, I really don't know. And we are still screaming for the hospital.
Why do you think nobody is listening, Agnes? And I mean, you have Sarawak representation in the second deputy health minister, Aaron Agodagang, who's the MP for Kanoet Sarawak. What would you like to see him raise in parliament and in cabinet?
Yeah, of course. I would love to have our representative from Sarawak to speak more, to be very vocal about the healthcare system in Sarawak. In Lawas especially, we really need the hospital and we need a specialist doctor to be stationed here. We need the hospital to be equipped, fully equipped. And if they don't do so, and you know, there's a lot more, a lot more of our mothers and our community here will end in a lot of this issue going. And it is, I just don't have words to describe, you know, how it's been 25 years we have been waiting for the Lawas Hospital to be built, but we still can't see it. And now they are working on it. And God knows whether this is going to happen or not. I really hope so.
Dr. John, what's lacking? Like Agnes said, you know, they are constantly screaming. I'm sure so are you, constantly advocating. What's lacking? Is it political will?
It's always political will. It's always. And that is the big problem. I think most people realize that you need to do a lot more, you know, but in the face of limited budget, and because of competing interests from different ministry and different area of interest, it is always then the political will to not place healthcare above anything else, and that's where the problem is. If you look at even the budget, for example, healthcare is not the top budget, isn't it? You know, healthcare is never always number one. And I think that is the problem. So it is to reshift our thinking and reshift our vision to put healthcare as the number one priority for the nation. Because when there is no health, there is nothing else. And our honorable minister, YB Khairi, said that just a few days ago, that if there is no health, you know, then there is nothing else. And he is absolutely right. But the problem is that we now have to walk the talk and to make sure that health is always our first priority.
Absolutely. Agnes, what else would you like to see? You know, the hospital, of course, better infrastructure, basic infrastructure that can help rural communities, you know, get out to town centres. What else would you like to see in terms of better healthcare for your community?
We don't need a specialist to be stationed here in Lawas. Even, now we have the current hospital that we have, we only have MO and medical assistant. So, and for complication patient, we do need a specialist to be here. So otherwise, it's everything will go on and go on, you know, there's no full stop to it.
As a final message, and I know, again, this may oversimplify things, but what would be on your wish list for the tabling of Budget 2022 and from the new health minister? Perhaps I can start with you, Agnes, and then Dr. John.
This is from me, from Lawas, from us, from Lawas especially. We do need the government to provide and equip medical staff in the rural clinics to handle and identify cases that require immediate attention. Second, equip rural clinics with proper equipment and train the medical staff to use those facilities. This will take the workload from the district hospitals. Third, all hospital projects must be solely under the Ministry of Health and not under JKR Sarawak. Fourth, all tenders for the hospital projects must be transparent and must be scrutinized by a Parliament Health Select Committee. And number five, special inquiry conducted on all failed hospitals projects in Sarawak, including Lawas District Hospital. Number six, competent and humane medical professionals. Number seven, well-equipped hospital and resident specialists at every district hospital in Sarawak.
And Dr. John?
My wish list is very simple. And that is always to put the health of the community and the health of the public as the first priority in your budget. And in particular, women and children as the forefront of our policy. So when we do that, every other thing that's related to that, we can actually put budget into it. So if we refocus and put that as our first priority, women and children first, and then after that, families and communities and health as public health as our first priority in the whole budget, then I think the rest would flow as what is needed.
And all communities, right? Regardless of documentation and status.
Yes, because health is for all.
Yeah. And, you know, Agnes has a plan laid out. You know, there's no need to reinvent the wheel. Just call up Agnes. She'll walk you through it. Thank you so much for your time today. I've been speaking to Agnes Padan, health activist and Sarawak Women Chief from Parti Keadilan Rakyat, PKR, and Dr. John Teo, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.